This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. The Mark Reardon Show.
There's no big energy coming out of the Democratic Party.
Shock, disgust, happiness, sweat. A little bit of lust, baby.
It's go time. It's go, no go, lock and load, love him and leave him, smoke him if you got him, see you when I see you, because it's time for Mark Reardon time.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Yes. Thank you, George Shea, for that intro. We always love it when the voice of the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest intros this very show, ladies and gentlemen. We got the Hall of Famer. Fred is here in the studio as we get started on a Wednesday edition. Sue Thomas also in the room with
us.
Hello. Do things sound different today? Have we determined that?
In our heads, it's better.
Okay. Maybe a little better. I don't know. I don't know what to think.
But it's better.
We've gone through all kinds of changes, and yesterday it sounded a little funny in our ear, but we're back on track today. We're going to get you through it here. First of all, let me just say this. What a beautiful, beautiful day.
Gorgeous.
I'll tell you what. You know, one of the things we're going to do on tomorrow's show, and I don't want to jinx anything, but I spent some time on the phone earlier with Mike Del Judas, who's in Billy Joel's band, and we're going to air an interview with him tomorrow.
Oh, cool.
But the weather on Friday night does not look good at all. Now, we got Evolution Festival, and it's interesting because you remember last week Steve Shankman told us, and Dave's told us this, Dave Murray is tight with Steve, and Dave used to be the guy at Busch Stadium that sort of, you know, managed some of the weather reports for the Cardinals. He had an official role, and he's coming in this weekend, not only because he's friends with Shankman, but because he's going to be the official meteorologist of Evolution Fest. And I think Evolution Festival is Saturday and Sunday. The weather looks better for Saturday and Sunday, but Friday just looks terrible. Now, we're sitting 2 days out from Friday, and maybe you know how that goes. You know how that goes. Hey, Fred, I was going to tell you this, too, and Sue, I think you can weigh in on this, and I'm not sure on all the geography right now, but we do have a hurricane that is going to make landfall, I think, in Florida on Thursday, and we should get your buddy Steve Jervy, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Great. Yeah.
I think that that would be appropriate. Now, they're talking about this could be a Category 4. It could be a significant hurricane, a pretty big storm surge. Now, you know, what's going to happen here, and I've been talking about this for weeks now, this prediction from earlier this summer is going to be the worst hurricane season ever in the Atlantic. It hasn't been. It's been the least active in history, in recorded history, the least active. The prediction was the most active, completely opposite. But this is a serious storm, and hurricane season continues, so I know that the folks down in Florida are taking this seriously. This one kind of popped up on us a little bit. I've been tracking it for a few days. I knew it was, you know, bubbling up, but I don't think it's getting, and Fred, you might be a good gauge of this, I don't think it's getting as much national attention right now.
I've heard a couple stories, but not much.
But, I mean, Thursday is landfall, so this is going to be here pretty quickly.
I have a friend that is at our house right now. She lives in Florida and left yesterday to actually beat the storm coming in so she could get out in time.
Wow.
So she's here.
Fred, last night at the Fox, we went to Back to the Future. We both had hot dates. I had Alexa Reardon. Fred had Joyce.
I had Joyce, my neighbor.
Joyce
was great.
Was there enjoying
the
show. And it was a pretty good show. I had to pull out at halftime. I didn't want to, but my daughter was... The show started late, Sue. So they didn't get us in. No, well, like it started after 8.
Oh.
It started at 8:15.
Like 8:15.
Because what happened was, is you know how the Fox, you get into the foyer, whatever they would call it. The lobby. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I didn't need to use a fancy word, did I? And they just wouldn't let us in. And Fred was, you know, raising hell, man.
Well,
he was throwing his arms up. He was dropping some F-bombs.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Why are you guys not letting us in? Yeah. I kept telling him, that's not going to do any good, Fred. I don't think it's going to work. But then they... they finally let us in. And then, you know, you have to get everyone seated at that point. Now, Bob Gale was there last night. It was awesome. We had Bob
great.
In the studio a week ago. He's from U City. He wrote Back to the Future and the sequels with Robert Zemeckis. They were film school chums at USC.
Yep.
And he came back into town. See, yesterday I was like, wait a second, this is weird. He was here last week. Is he coming back? Will it be a video? But he went up. Fred, you can tell me because I missed this part. He came up for the curtain call,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he came up at the end after everyone took their bows. He came up and he was showed off a couple honors that he got while he was in town yesterday. It was Back to the Future Day in the city of St. Louis.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And it was Bob Gale Day in University City.
That's awesome.
So there were a couple nice proclamations.
Well, Fred and I were talking about this a little bit because that has got to be very weird, surreal. The guy that wrote the movie, that, you know, produced the play, that is behind this story, and then he's seeing the show for how many times has he seen it? Who knows? You know, a handful, obviously, was on Broadway, but it's got to be weird. And then, you know, if you're the guy who created Back to the Future and you see something on stage, you're like, I don't like that guy playing Marty McFly. What do you do?
And nothing. What about the pressure on the performers, too, yeah. to know that he's in the state?
That's actually a good point.
Well, that's true. Remember, he said, though, he had a hand in the development of it because he wanted it to be right. So maybe, but you're right about the each particular actor.
It was really well done. I mean, with just the whole visuals of the thing. It's pretty amazing visuals.
I thought it was really well done.
Good.
You know, the visuals were great, and they used a little video, but some of it, I guess I would describe as blurred out, and then the car, when it spins out, was really, really cool. Now, here's what I would say. Just because I call it like I see it, I didn't think the music was that great.
Oh, okay.
But I thought the cast was really good, and the storytelling was excellent. The setup and the stage, whatever, the set, I guess we call
it. Did they have a good Marty McFly?
I think they did.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
I think everybody was well cast.
I think the guy who played his dad,
George McFly, was really good.
I didn't bring this up with Bob because there's a story there, man, I wanted to, and maybe I should have asked him last night because I did say hi to him. But Crispin Glover and Bob Gale, I don't think they like each other very much because there's videos out there. When I was getting ready for that interview last week, there's interviews with Crispin Glover where he's asked something, and then he's like, wait, I want to make sure this is clear, and he just freaking rips on Bob Gale. He doesn't rip on Bob Zemeckis. He rips on Bob Gale. So I don't know what this... There's always stories, though, behind the scenes, right?
Yeah, that's true.
No idea what that's all about. All right, couple things before we get rolling here. There's this Secret Service report that is out today by the Senate committee that looked at it. And I don't know how much you heard about this morning.
I didn't.
This focuses on the rally in Butler, Pennsylvania on July 13th. And, you know, we knew since July 13th that there were lots of issues with the Secret Service. We knew that the former Secret Service director went up there and testified. That didn't go very well. She finally resigned. And, you know, there have been a lot of questions about what happened there. And some of the answers that we're finding out right now are not very, they don't make you feel good about where the Secret Service is and, you know, just the state of that whole organization. Hang on a second here. Let me see. That sounded like my voice, didn't it?
Yeah, it came back at you.
Mm-hmm. That's not good. I'm not sure why that happened. Hold on. I don't like that. So I was going to play you a piece of audio, but let me see if this will work here. Hang on. I might have been doing the wrong thing.
For 2 minutes, they let the president out there exposed before those shots were fired. And then back up for at least 30 minutes, the Secret Service knew that there was a suspicious character out there with their rangefinder. I think everybody would be very concerned. Why did they let the president take the stage?
So that's Roger Marshall, who's the senator. By the way, that was operator error. I was pressing the wrong button. I'm still getting used to things with my brain. And my brain is very small, so I apologize for that. But we're going to get into that. Tim Fitch, former St. Louis County police chief and former St. Louis County councilman, has read this report. It really is rather shocking when you see some of this stuff, even on the drones. You know, a lot of questions about the drones. There's information there that does not make the Secret Service look very good. So we'll get to that. We also have Thomas Helbig and Bob Kershaw joining us. We have another. In fact, it's our final event of 2024, Tuesday, October 1st. That's next Tuesday, the St. Louis Plaza Frontenac Hilton. We'd love to see you there. You can always register at retirementkey.com. And that's a free event. We just need an RSVP. Where do I want to start with some of this other stuff? All right, I'll say this just as a quick side note, and then we'll bid farewell to a brutal murderer. But Marcellus Willis was finally put to death last night, and it was well beyond the time that it, you know, should have occurred. This thing got dragged out for literally years. I read part of the op-ed piece that Lisha Gale, who was the person who was brutally murdered, stabbed 38 times, she worked at the Post-Dispatch. She had a husband, and that husband remarried, and his new wife has written several op-eds for the Post. He doesn't really feel comfortable talking. Who can blame him, right? But this has been very painful for their family to to relive this time and time and time again. And shame on Wesley Bell. You know, I said this yesterday. Wesley Bell, former, well, he's currently the St. Louis prosecutor. He'll soon be formal because he's going to Congress, provided he wins the, you know, the general, which I don't think is in doubt. But he, I think he felt like he had to play to a certain community here because he failed on the Mike Brown front. Look, there was no evidence to bring any charges against Darren Wilson. We all knew that. But Wesley Bell, when he gets into the prosecutor's office, he dangles this fantasy out there for people. And then he couldn't make it work, mainly because there's no evidence. So on this front, he's like, I think he's got to get good with the BLM crowd or something like that. Here's the problem, though, okay? Marcellus Williams, somebody tweeted at me, I think there was doubt in his guilt enough to warrant life in prison instead of death, but Mark is glad another N is dead. Here's how I would respond to that. Here's how I did respond to that on Twitter. There's zero doubt. I mean, zero doubt about this guy's guilt. It was this whole nonsense about the DNA that blew up. It was a bunch of crap, right? All of the appeals by Wesley Bell and others were complete and total BS. Complete and total BS. But yes, I will admit that I'm very happy that a brutal killer who stabbed a woman 38 times got a needle in his arm last night and left the planet. I'm good with that. I'm not going to have any regrets about that. The Armory has shut down in St. Louis. You know what's funny about that is when I drove to the Fox last night, I passed the Armory, and despite ripping on certain parts of downtown Sioux with crime, there are parts of St. Louis, including where the Armory is,
yeah,
that make
fantastic.
Me pretty proud. You know, I'm driving last night, I'm thinking, you know, there's really cool parts of the city. If I'm, I don't know how many people do this, but if I'm a visitor, I think about when I'm in Louisville or Kansas City or whatever city we don't live in, and I'm thinking, if people are in this part of you know, downtown St. Louis, in downtown West, it's pretty cool. And the Armory is shut down, though. Now, this may be temporary. Fred, did you hear anything about this today?
Yeah, I did. They've been doing stories on it down at Camo X.
We got tipped on this, actually, by producer emeritus Dave Klein. And this place has been open for 2 years. It's an entertainment venue. It's pretty awesome. And now it's shut down. And they say, you know, they sent a message out to the people who work there saying, if you're on the schedule for this weekend, we won't need your service. Now, the story that's in the Post says that this is the latest sign of trouble with the developer Green Street St. Louis, which was part of the ownership. They say that they're going to reopen it. It's been open since December of 2022. They say this is temporary.
I understand from reading it, it sounded like they wanted to do a rooftop thing and something else elsewhere in the building, but that never got funded. And they're frustrated that it didn't get funded. And I don't know whether that means they're looking now for funding for both of those things and then they'll reopen. Or he said it just couldn't be sustained as it was.
Well, we'll see.
Both the other things.
Maybe there'll be an injection of cash.
Right. They lost a lot of money and they weren't making much money.
Right. Well,
because promises weren't kept.
Yeah. That's not great for business. Right. And then I find this interesting. Now, I'm the first to admit, as you know, that maybe there's more to the story here because sometimes, as you know, the media doesn't give us everything. But this whole situation in St. Louis Public Schools with the superintendent. So Keisha Scarlett was the woman that was hired last year and she was really good at her job. She took a $17 million surplus, and she turned it into a $32 million deficit. I mean, that's pretty... You got to win an award for that, like Educator of the Year or something like that. And then she hired everyone that she used to work with in Seattle gave them sweetheart gigs. And, you know, now, so they suspended her. Here's the other thing about this. This is great. These kids are way behind in St. Louis Public Schools. The parents were thrown a curveball. They didn't even know how to get their damn kids to school right before classes were supposed to start 5 or 6 weeks ago. And you have learning loss from the pandemic, all these things that these kids have been through. And let's face it, the kids in the city schools, you can multiply at times whatever number compared to the white kids in the suburbs. They're going to suffer more. I'm not going to deny that. So they suspend her. And I guess they have now voted to terminate her contract for cause at a board meeting last night. She says she ain't going anywhere right now, and she's going to probably countersue and sue the district. She was hired.
Great.
But this is great. Listen to this. So she was hired at a salary of $268,000. School superintendents do pretty well, right? But she was suspended And she's been on paid leave, and she's still on paid leave until the hearing date next month. So she's sitting around after spending all this money, after hiring her friends and family members and all this stuff. She has earned $67,000 since the end of July when she was suspended. That's a pretty good gig if you can get it, right?
That's ridiculous. Okay, but somebody brought this up the last time we talked about this and said all of this money expenditures had to be approved by the board.
Right.
The school board had to be complicit.
That's the part that is confusing to me. She went out there and she did some things. And look, if we're being honest, people who move into new positions, they bring people along from their previous jobs. It's not unusual. I think the part that was unusual here is the amount of money that was being spent, the contracts that were awarded with no bids. But Sue, that's a great question. I don't know, but the board certainly here is unanimous in their decision to send her packing. But of course, now she gets a hearing, and I don't know. Is the hearing just so we can delay the, you know, the compensation?
I don't know.
And if you fire someone for cause, I don't think you have to pay out the contract, but she's getting paid right now.
And how long was she superintendent? She did all this?
About a year.
About a year.
She's got gifts for it.
I know.
To be able to pull that off.
I give her credit for that because that's not easy to do. Okay, we're off and running here on a Wednesday afternoon. We got Tim Fitch coming up. He's going to join us and talk a little bit about not only some law enforcement stuff, but the Secret Service report that came out. And it's rather shocking when you hear the details. We've got Thomas Helbig coming up with his nephew to talk about the next Protecting Your Retirement event. We'll get into Alex Rich, who is one of our friends from Y98, who joins us on a Wednesday. He's coming up in the next hour. And this band right here, Bare Naked Ladies, at the Factory in Chesterfield tonight. Hang in there. Coming back.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40... it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
No, we had obviously another terrible thing happen over the weekend with Officer Lee, who was killed by the migrant who was not here legally with the DUI. And then this has gone national a little bit.
The reason he didn't have a license is because he was on probation for a separate drunk driving case. And under the terms of his probation, he shouldn't have been driving. But early Sunday morning, prosecutors say Ramon Chavez Rodriguez was doing just that while drunk, speeding at least 71 miles per hour when he lost control of his car and plowed into St. Louis police officer David Lee, who was standing on the side of the highway helping someone who had been in a crash. The 44-year-old officer, who served for 18 years on the force, later passed away at a nearby hospital, leaving behind his wife and two kids.
Yeah, a terrible story. That's Garrett Tenney on Fox. Former St. Louis County Police Chief Tim Fitch is here. We're going to talk about some stuff related to the Secret Service, but I had to start with that. And obviously, it's been a bit of a rough end of the summer for officers here in our area.
No doubt about that. What a sad shame, and how preventable was that? Just awful for this family. Of course, when I was at the county police, I went through 9 line of duty deaths during my time there. There's nothing worse than have to go talk to a family about their public servant that's no longer with us. It's awful.
I can't even imagine. And in this situation, I wonder how many times and what's the result of an officer pulls someone over that doesn't have a driver's license, that has, you know, let's say that this guy was pulled over before this even happened, which would have been awesome, would have saved a life here. What could the police have done in that situation? I mean, obviously, right, if you're drunk, they could have made an arrest. But what are the other, you know, aspects of that related to not being legally in this country and also not having a driver's license?
Well, you're not going to like this answer, but generally speaking, if they just don't have a driver's license, you write them a ticket for no driver's license, and you're supposed to say, oh, by the way, you can't drive. You don't have a driver's license before you get the ticket. I guarantee you, after you drive away, they drive away. They're probably not calling their loved one to come and pick them up because they shouldn't be driving. But that's the reality of how traffic is enforced. And that's not just in St. Louis. That's all over. Generally speaking, they do not put handcuffs on you and take you to jail because you don't have a driver's license. Now, if you can't identify them because they have no ID on them, you absolutely have the legal right to arrest them and take them in, fingerprint them, figure out if they're, you know, a convicted felon with a firearm, you know, whatever the issues might be, because you don't know who they are. You're not going to write a ticket to somebody not knowing who they are. So there are times where you do arrest people for traffic violations, but it's only when you can't verify their identity.
By the way, and I think we had tried to get him on this afternoon, but I think he was busy. But I heard him, actually, I was listening this morning to Cam Wex, and Chief Doyle was on from Ferguson, and he had somewhat a little encouraging news about Travis Brown, saying he's breathing again after breathing well again after a bout with pneumonia, still in a coma. There's some signs that are positive. He said also that they are keeping a vigil in his hospital room 24/7, so someone is there when he does wake up. I don't know if you have any other information, but that's just, it doesn't seem like, you know, there's going to be a real quick recovery in any way, shape, or form there.
Well, I have been one of the people. I've sat there with him and stayed with him twice now for 4 hours each time. We take turns doing that. And I will tell you that the family, unbelievably committed to TJ, mother staying the night with him every night. It's really the support that he has from the community, the police department, other police departments, and his family is outstanding. Now we need him. We need him back with us.
Absolutely.
We need him awake and back with us. And I still think, as Chief Doyle said, it's going to be a long road ahead.
Former St. Louis County Police Chief Tim Fitch is here. All right, this report that came out today, this is from the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations is what it's called. And Ron Johnson, who is a Republican senator from Wisconsin, I know Senator Johnson, we go way back. And also Gary Peters, who's a Democrat from Michigan, Rand Paul from Kentucky, and Richard Blumenthal from Connecticut released this report. And I've read through some of it, but it's rather shocking how many failures. I mean, I think we knew that there were failures, but this spells it out in a little bit more detail, doesn't it?
It does. And by the way, the acting director of the Secret Service says, oh, by the way, it's all true. This is all accurate. So this isn't one of those political hit jobs that we're used to coming out of some of these reports and these investigations. He basically acknowledged it. You're exactly right. Everything you hit on is right. And I will tell you, this was and I said this before with you, it was a massive failure. The people I know at the Secret Service, people that I've hired that left the county, went to the Secret Service, people like that, they're in agreement that this was a mess.
Right.
This was an absolute mess. It's a mess in leadership. I would never blame the people on the ground. They're doing what they're being told. But I will tell you that the leadership in this situation, clearly, this was a failure of imagination. Somebody didn't say, oh my gosh, look at that rooftop over there. Shouldn't we have this covered? It was predictable. And if it's predictable, it's preventable. And there were a lot of things that were missed in this. I've worked many presidential visits and presidential debates at WashU, and I will tell you, when this report came out, it's like, oh my gosh, this, so much of this is basic. How the heck did this happen? And I think it really comes down to who's in charge of this. The bottom line is the Secret Service is in charge of it. Every one of these events I ever work, the Secret Service says, we need people here, we need them there, we need this. I brought out dump trucks to block the road so somebody couldn't crash through into WashU's property, blah, blah, blah. But that was all in coordination with the Secret Service. And the other thing you saw, Mark, was the lack, the failure of communications between local agencies and the Secret Service. Every one of these I ever worked, it was us, local law enforcement, and the Secret Service sitting next to each other in the same room. So even though we may not be able to communicate on their radio, which is apparently still an issue today because they have their own radio system and it's a different band, and all the different things that come with communications, but you're sitting next to each other. So this would have been, you know, the Butler County folks saying, hey, agent, there's a guy climbing up on the roof.
Right.
So let your folks know that didn't happen.
Well, yeah, to your point,
cell phone.
Here's what the report says on that, because this might be one of the more stunning aspects of this. The United States Secret Service failed to communicate information about the suspicious person to key personnel and failed to take action to ensure the safety of former President Trump. At approximately 5:44 p.m., Secret Service personnel were notified that local law enforcement observed a suspicious person with a rangefinder near the AGR building. By 5:52, at least eight Secret Service personnel had been informed. Approximately 2 minutes before shots were fired, the security room located on the rally grounds was told that there was an individual on the roof in the AJR building. Shortly before the shots were fired, the counter sniper observed local officers running toward the AJR building with guns drawn. But 2 minutes in the whole scheme of this, that's a long time when you are notified that someone is a danger to a former president.
Absolutely. I think at the bottom line, if you would just want to sum it up, they played it cheap. They played it cheap. Do I think there was a conspiracy to let this happen to Trump? No, I'm not one of those people that think that way. I know too many Secret Service agents that take their job very seriously. This was a failure in leadership and a failure of imagination of that leadership. So there's a lot of, you know, how about the drone
situation? Yeah, let me highlight this, okay? This is where I was going to go next. The United States Secret Service counter-drone system experienced technical problems that left it inoperable for hours. Sue, listen to this. With no backup system, Secret Service agent responsible for overseeing the CUAS capabilities at the July 13th rally called a toll-free tech support hotline to start troubleshooting with the company, which took several hours. And by the way, that agent only had 3 months of experience working with the equipment and didn't know much about it. So there's right there. I mean, there's so many different things. It's not just one or two. It's like 10 to 15 different things that they screwed up here.
Jeez.
Yeah. Have you ever been on hold with the IT help desk anywhere?
Yeah. Well, ThrottleNet would get that picked up within 2 minutes. But yes, I've heard that elsewhere.
Yeah. So there's just one issue after another. And it was really a cascading effect of failures that led to this. And, we got off. We were very fortunate, if you want to call it that. Yes, there was a man killed. Feel very bad. This could have been much worse, and it was only, as we know, by millimeters at this point, that it wasn't much worse, but it was bad enough. It was bad enough that people had to be shot, and one man lost his life. Awful.
And how about the details coming out against this other guy, you know, in the second assassination attempt, and the level of nut job that he is a Hall of Fame level, I think.
Yeah, I think that one will get interesting. The other thing I'll tell you, Mark, is I don't think this is over. I think there's going to be others that are going to continue to do this and test this. You know, when I said when Trump got the nomination, I said the biggest concern I have is if they think he's going to be the president, I'm talking about these disturbed people, if they think he's going to be the president, some people, the only way they know how to react is they think the only solution is violence. And to them, it's kind of relieving when they make a decision. I'm going to go try to, in this case we saw in Florida, you know, and stick this gun through the fence and see if I could get him. That's not the only guy out there.
No.
You know, I would say there's more loose than there are locked up.
Well, and he seemed to be, you know, very proud of himself saying, hey, I'll let you down, but if anyone else wants to try, go for it. Yeah. And that's what we're up against. I hope you're wrong, but former Senator Lamping's been talking about this too for a while, and the threats are not going to go away. Chief, I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on here this afternoon.
Okay.
All right, take care. I want to read a little bit. He's read the report, but I wanted to share a little bit more. And keep in mind, this is a bipartisan, you know, committee, but this is what the chair of the committee, Richard Blumenthal, said. He's a Democrat. What happened on July 13th was an accumulation of errors that produced a perfect storm of stunning failure. It was a tragedy and completely preventable from the outset. There was both a failure to provide resources, like a working radio.
Wow, they're actually saying that.
Oh,
that's
drone
okay.
detection system or counter-surveillance team and a lack of effective chain of command. Looking forward, we need structural reform in the agency itself. The Secret Service is filled with dedicated and skilled men and women who serve our country, yada, 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 yada. And
okay, Mark,
you know, we got to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Yeah, we need to. Is that not happening now? I mean, we have an immediate need.
Well, I think it is, but this goes much deeper. It really is. And, you know, they actually make a bunch of recommendations. They say that Congress should require the Secret Service to identify defined roles and responsibilities in advance of each protective event. They should designate a single individual responsible for approving all plans. Now, how is that not something that happens right now, right? Why is one person not a point person that includes the responsibility for approving security perimeters? That just seems like common sense to me. DHS and United States Secret Service should ensure communication plans between federal, state, and local law enforcement and first responders are properly executed. Again, some of this stuff, that should have been the playbook already. Why are we saying this should happen now? Secret Service should consider sending additional assets, including counter snipers, to all future outdoor protective events. Yeah, let's beef it up. How about 5 more countersnipers or whatever, you know, the situation might call for. Congress should evaluate the budget and resources. Security requirements should be determined depending on various threat levels. I think that there are a lot of things that tax money goes to that we would all agree is a big waste of money, but this seems to be relatively important for the Republic, so maybe we should put some resources on it. And it's rather shocking, but it is bipartisan. And again, to Chief Fitch's point, it's not like this is in doubt.
No. Nope.
This was something the Secret Service is like, yep, you got us. You're right about all this stuff right now, which is really, really unfortunate. All right, we got a few more things to go. Thomas Helbig and Bob Kershaw are going to join us here in just a couple of minutes for the preview of the next Protecting Your Retirement event. We're going to get together for the final event of this year on Tuesday night, next Tuesday. Matt Crisilius is going to be here. On the topic of cops, they're hosting a fundraiser this Friday night for Mike Coletti. He's an instructor at the police academy. He was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. As a family, they're trying to do something pretty cool, raise some money at the police lodge on Baxter Road in my old neck of the woods in Baldwin. We have former Senator Talent on tonight. We'll talk about Biden's UN speech and some other things, especially related to Hezbollah and Israel. And then my friend Dan O'Donnell is going to be here. Dan and I worked together at WTMJ many years ago in Milwaukee. He has a talk show now in his own right on a competing station up there, WISN. But, you know, Wisconsin's immensely important electorally to this presidential race and consequential. And then there's a question. I mentioned Senator Ron Johnson here a few minutes ago. He's been trying to poke around in his state about why the state of Wisconsin won't clear what he says are 4 million bad voter names on the rolls.
4 million?
Yeah, that seems like a high number, but we'll have Dan break it down in the 5 o'clock hour, plus an audio cut of the day and more. Uh-oh, Sue reacted to this piece of bumper music. I almost played September because...
But Earth, Wind, and Fire, you can't beat it. Let's groove tonight. Let's groove tonight.
Absolutely. All right, we have Sue's News in the next hour. Our friend Alex Rich from Y98 will join us. I also have a... I don't know how to tease this properly. A Christmas-related story to share here at the top of the hour. But right now, look who's in the studio with us right now. Thomas Helbig and his nephew, Bob Kershaw. We have another in a series of Protecting Your Retirement events coming up next Tuesday, Plaza Frontenac Hilton. Gentlemen, how are you?
Good. Good. Thanks for having us, Mark.
We have arrived at the final seminar of 2024. We do 5 a year. I cannot believe that the year is almost over, but it's coming up here next Tuesday night.
This is the last event of the year, and you don't want to miss it, especially with this election coming. That's what we're going to be talking about. The markets are teetering on this election, and I'm going to read some articles here that people need to know about. This is important stuff.
It is important. You've got, and I've told people this, you've got a guide on the website. If you go to retirementkey.com, you can download a guide that addresses the issue of an election uncertainty, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You can do that. So here's what I'd like to read. Here's an article that just came out recently. Billionaire hedge fund manager John Paulson has threatened to remove all of his money from the U.S. markets if Vice President Kamala Harris wins this election. The Paulson & Company founder made the shocking revelation during an appearance on Fox Business News last Tuesday. If Harris is elected, I will pull all my money from the markets, because I think the uncertainty regarding the plans they have outlined will create a lot of uncertainty and the markets are likely to crash. Elon Musk, the world's richest man, responded to Paulson's promise by tweeting legendary investor Warren Buffett was already preparing for this outcome. Buffett has now increased his cash reserves to $277 billion because of this market. Who's going to get elected and who may lose? Paulson cited the policies Harris campaign laid out that would focus on more centralized price controls and new government spending programs that were all behind his fears. Economists have estimated the plans will cost over $10 trillion.
Oh, that's all?
Folks, we have inflation now. This will destroy the economy.
Well, this is scary what you're
saying. This is really scary.
Right,
I've got a couple things to say, and then I'll finish. The future of the American stock market and economy relies on the winner of the November 5th general election. If they do implement a 25% tax on unrealized gains, that will cause a massive selling of everything. Stocks, bonds, homes, and even art. I think it will cause a crash in the markets worse than that of 1929.
Okay, so now that Thomas has made us all feel a lot better here this afternoon, then along those lines, and there's going to be some risks and some gambles moving forward, but what's your message then when people show up on Tuesday night?
So message is once again, we're not here to scare you folks, but this is real life. This is what's happening.
This is,
and this is the future that we are facing. You've worked your entire life to save this money so you could have that comfortable retirement that you've always wanted. We just urge you, don't wait till it's too late. Don't wait till the market takes a 40 or 50% crash for you to lose half of all the money that you've worked for all your lives, and then make a change.
Yeah.
So we just urge you, come once again. This is the last event. You're going to want to come. You're going to want to hear what we have to say. Thomas has quite a few more articles also that you're
I'm going to read a short one from Mark Cuban.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Oh, yeah, Mark Cuban's interesting.
Mark Cuban is a registered Democrat.
Yeah, by the way, he's in denial about a lot of this, I think.
Well, listen to this
article. Okay, this just came out.
I just listened to him today on some economic things, and Mark seems confused. But what does he say?
Kamala Harris will kill the stock market if she is elected as U.S. president, says Mark Cuban. Cuban has said that it is a terrible proposal, that it will force investors to sell their stocks and assets in order to pay their taxes, which will eventually crash the market. The Dallas Mavericks owner has also warned that this will prevent entrepreneurs to make their companies go public to avoid the complications arising from taxes. Cuban has also apprehended that investors would become less interested in backing startups if the measures proposed by Harris are put into effect.
Yeah, he's right about all that. But what's weird is he's out there every time I look at MSNBC or CNBC, he's hawking stuff for Harris.
Absolutely. That's why we were so surprised that he actually said this.
Mark Cox even saw the article, and he was going to play it today.
He's definitely
a Democrat, but if he does not agree with her policy and she does this, a 25% on unrealized gains, the markets are shot.
It
will collapse the market. So, folks, don't miss this event. Go to your phones, 314-993-9494. Go online at retirementkey.com. You want to come to this event and learn the strategies. We'll protect your life savings, and you'll never lose a penny.
Thomas and Bob, great to see you, and I'll see you guys Tuesday night.
Perfect. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, thank you guys. Thomas Helbig and Bob Kershaw, they will be there. And we just need to know that you're coming. You just go to retirementkey.com and we will see you there on Tuesday night. We get stories like this, and something tells me that there's probably going to be a lot more that come out in the aftermath of the pandemic and all the money that was spent. This is a story, though, Sue, that was in the LA Times today. I don't remember this show, and I guess it was a NBC docuseries that was on last year called LA Fire and Rescue. Did you ever hear that?
Nope.
Me neither. But people watched it, right? And they were asked in the aftermath, and I guess this was like, it's like reality TV, where they were showing these firefighters in LA County, you know, doing heroic things, putting out fires, rescuing people and stuff like that. So at the end of all of the shows on LA Fire and Rescue, people were asked to donate money through a foundation, and they raised a lot of money, like millions and millions of dollars, and they don't know where all the money is.
Oh,
yeah. So They say the foundation that raised the money denies, of course, they always deny wrongdoing. They say all the donations benefited firefighters, with more than $5 million going for the L.A. County Fire Department. But there was also, and I don't know what to think about this. This happens in the nonprofit world, right? They do bonuses. So I have mixed feelings about this. So the person that was responsible for all this was paid $232,500, and that includes a pretty nice bonus because of incentives that were put in to raise money. Well, you know, I mixed feelings. You would say, wait a second, shouldn't all the money go to the charity? But on the other hand, if you have an executive director, if you have a CEO that's bringing in a lot more money, that's what their role is. I'm not so sure I have as big an issue with it. But the bigger problem here is that they had $1.9 million a year that they were getting in contributions, et cetera, and they don't know where all the money went, essentially. They've turned over pages of documents to the county because of this lawsuit. They have $2 million left in the bank account, but a lot of people are wondering where all that money is. And that's just unfortunate, right?
Unfortunate.
Raise money for a good cause, and then there's questions and abuse like that. We'll take a break here at the top of the hour. Fox News will come back. I can't believe I have a story that I'm going to share that I hinted toward this in the last hour is somewhat Christmas-related. Are we even at the end of September yet?
No.
We're close. I can't believe this. This is a little shocking. I'm going to share it coming up here on 97.1 FM Talk. Hang in there.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.